Okay. That's everyone. Well, I suppose everyone can. Okay, thank you very much. I'm Cora Dvorkin. I'm a graduate student at University of Chicago. And today I will talk about model-independent constraints and inflation from the CMB. Okay, so here's a roadmap of the talk. I will first start by an overview of the cosmic microwave background and inflation. Then I will introduce a general method that I developed with Wayne Hu to constrain the inflationary potential from CMB observations, allowing for any general form of the inflationary potential, including features. I will introduce the theoretical framework for this method. And in the second part of the talk, I will show how I implemented this formalism to the data, and I will present results coming from Markov chain Monte Carlo likelihood analysis. And I will end with conclusions and future directions. Okay, so this figure represents 13.7 billion years of the universe. As we all know, the universe began as a hot and dense plasma of particles in thermal equilibrium. At redshifts of around 1100, the universe protons and electrons recombine into hydrogen in a period that we know as recombination. And the universe became mainly transparent to CMB photons. So photons mainly free stream toward us until redshift of around 10, when radiation from the first stars and quasars reionized the universe in a period that we know as reionization. And about 10% of these photons rescatter. So what we observe today is these photons at microwave frequencies and at a temperature of about 2.7 Kelvin. So what we measure is these temperature fluctuations of the photons in different positions of the sky. And by studying the statistical properties of these temperature fluctuations, we can infer the physics from the very early universe. We have measured these temperature fluctuations to be Gaussian at first order and with a temperature of approximately 100 microkelvin. So if the field is Gaussian and isotropic, all of the information is contained in the power spectrum. So we can take these temperature fluctuations that we observe at different directions in the sky and make a spherical harmonic decomposition. And by taking the two-point function of these spherical harmonic coefficients, we can compute the temperature power spectrum. The temperature power spectrum has been predicted and measured with great accuracy over the last decade. I'm showing here WMAP's 7-year data of the temperature power spectrum as a function of multiple moment. The structure of these acoustic peaks carries the information of acoustic oscillations in the photon-variant plasma at the time of recombination. In red, I'm showing here the best fit model for this data. This best fit model works very well, but it makes fundamental assumptions. In particular, it assumes that there is a single scalar field slowly rolling down the potential. And in this talk, I will introduce a general method to test for these assumptions. I will test for fundamental assumptions made in standard cosmology. I will test for single field and slow roll inflation in a general and model-independent way. So here is where we stand in cosmology today. We have a standard model of cosmology that we know as lambda CDM. We have a homogeneous background, and we measure its constituents pretty well. We know that we have 4% of baryonic matter, approximately 22% of cold dark matter, 74% of dark energy. On top of that, we have perturbations, and we measure the parameters of these perturbations very well. We measure them to be nearly scale invariant and approximately Gaussian. So we made big strides in measuring all of these parameters. However, big questions remain. What is dark energy? What is dark matter? What is the physics that seeded the first structure of the universe? And it's in this question that I will base my talk today. So, inflation is the main paradigm that explains the observed inhomogeneities in the universe today. It's a period of accelerated expansion, and it explains why the universe is approximately homogeneous and spatially flat. So the condition of being a period of accelerated expansion implies that it is sourced by a component of negative pressure. So what is this component that sources inflation? What causes inflation? And in the simplest models, this component can be taken to be a scalar field. So it is commonly assumed that there is a single scalar field rolling down a potential. The equations of motion of this scalar field that we know as the inflaton field in a Friedman-Robertson-Walker universe are given by the following set of equations, where this is the expansion rate of the universe, this is the energy density of the inflaton field given by its kinetic energy and its potential energy, and the expansion rate of the universe appears as a source of friction in the equations of motion. So while the inflaton rolls down the potential, the commoving horizon is decreasing, and different modes of the field cross the horizon. So when a mode of the field crosses the horizon, a perturbation is generated at a certain scale. We can take the two-point function of these perturbations and compute the initial curvature power spectrum that I'm showing here. A certain scale k in the initial curvature power spectrum is associated with an angular scale L that we observe today in the CMB temperature power spectrum. So what happens is that at later and later times, perturbations are being generated at smaller and smaller scales. So the idea is that by measuring the different angular scales in the CMB temperature and polarization power spectrum, we can improve different areas in the inflationary potential. So the physics of this period is yet unknown, and our goal today will be to shed light on the physics of this era by using CMB observations. Okay, so let me give you a brief background. The standard slow roll approximation is a commonly used technique for computing the initial curvature power spectrum for inflationary models where the scalar field potential is sufficiently flat and slowly varying. Here are the slow roll parameters, epsilon h, theta h, and delta 2, expressed as a function of time derivatives of the inflaton field and the expansion rate of the universe. They are assumed to be small and slowly varying, and they are linked to the shape of the potential. So in this approximation, one can calculate the power spectrum, evaluating these slow roll parameters at horizon crossing. Oh, you cannot see this. Well, evaluating the slow roll parameters at horizon crossing. However, this leads to curvature power spectra that are featureless and nearly scale invariant. But these assumptions are not necessarily true. And in fact, there is some space in WMAP data for having features in the inflationary potential. So glitches observed in the temperature power spectrum of the CMB have led to interest in exploring models with features in the inflationary potential. And many groups have studied this. This is just one example. I'm showing here WMAP 5-year data in blue of the temperature power spectrum as a function of multiple moment. In black, I'm showing a model of the temperature power spectrum with a step in the inflationary potential that maximizes WMAP likelihood. In red, I'm showing the standard power law model of lambda CVM. This model with a feature has an improvement of delta chi square of 8 over a smooth model. However, it has 3 additional degrees of freedom, so this significance, this improvement is marginal. And moreover, these kinds of models were proposed a posteriori after looking at the data, so there is a lot of fine-tuning, and the statistical significance is really difficult to assess.
What method will you use to decide how many parameters are justified for a given decrease in chi-square?
Well, you can compute the chi-square with x degrees of freedom, and you can calculate the probability of having that certain delta chi-square with a certain number of degrees of freedom. And in this case, it's about 5%.
But don't you need something, some criterion like Bayesian information criterion or AIC? Or you have to make some decision about how you're going to penalize having extra parameters as a function of the chi-square, right?
Right. So one decision would be to compute the probability of the delta chi-square with 3 extra degrees of freedom. Say a delta chi-square of 8 with 3 extra degrees of freedom has a probability of 5%.
Okay.
implies a probability of 5% of having that improvement, about 5%. So, yes, the statistical significance is difficult to assess in these models that are proposed a posteriori after looking at the data. And so to be more specific, what these previous studies do is they start from a specific, so this is commonly done in cosmology. So you start with a specific model of the inflationary potential. You compute the background equation and the equations of motion of the inflaton field to compute the Mukhanov equation. And you compute the initial curvature power spectrum that I'm showing here. From here, you can solve the Boltzmann equations to compute the temperature and polarization power spectrum of this model, compare it with the data, and assess its statistical significance. So here I will propose a method to reverse engineer and instead start from the observables, temperature and polarization power spectrum, and from there impose constraints into the inflationary potential beyond any specific model of inflationary potential. So that's the main thing that I will show you today in this model. Yes.
So you still assume a model which is basically a single scalar field with canonical data.
That's right. Yes. Okay, so I assume a single scalar field with a canonical kinetic term, but I don't make any assumption of the inflationary potential itself. That's what I mean, yeah. So we need a general method that allows for features in the inflationary potential. And as an example, I will take a model with a step in the inflationary potential that I'm showing here in black, and I compare it with a smooth model in the potential that I'm showing here in red. This, when the inflaton rolls across the feature, this produces ringing in the curvature power spectrum. And the scales at which these oscillations happen are related to the modes, correspond to the modes that were crossing the horizon when the inflaton crosses the feature. So these models were proposed to explain the glitches as other than statistical flukes. And in order to do this, they require order unity variations in the curvature power spectrum. So here, the slow roll parameters are not necessarily small or slowly varying. I'm showing here the slow roll parameters as a function of conformal time to the end of inflation for a model with the feature in black and a smooth model in red. So this is epsilon h, eta h, and delta 2. As we can see, eta h is of order unity when the inflaton crosses the feature. Delta 2 is greater than unity. And epsilon remains small, but its fractional change is of order unity. So here, the slow roll approximation is not a valid assumption anymore, and we have to move forward. So our method is based on an approximation that was first proposed by Stewart in order to deal with models with features in the inflationary potential. It starts by a transformation of variables of the field equation of the perturbations in the inflaton field into dimensionless variables x and y. Here, g is the source function that carries the information of deviations from perfect slow roll. So when g is equal to 0, we have the case of perfect slow roll, the field is not moving, and this differential equation is straightforward to solve. The solution is given by y naught. So the fundamental assumption in the GSR approximation is to replace y by y naught in the source term of the field equation. Note that this does not require that the source function, that is a linear function in the slow roll parameters, is small everywhere. A mode can encounter a strong variation of the source function while well inside the horizon, and it will not retain any imprints of this variation, and the GSR approximation will correctly describe the curvature this mode induces. So from here, we can construct a solution using the green function approach. However, this solution has problems. The main problem is that it represents a linearized expansion of a correction that is not necessarily small. So when the correction becomes large, the curvature can pass through zero, leaving nodes in the power spectrum when the exact solution does not have them. The more fundamental problem is that the curvature that is required to be constant by the exact solution for modes outside the horizon is not constant everywhere here. In other words, it depends on the choice of x. So x equal 1 is horizon crossing, and it depends on any choice of x when x is less than 1. So...
Sorry, I'm not quite following. So this equation, the third line that you have here, is this exact or is that an approximation?
This is an approximation. So I'm the approximation is to replace y by y naught here.
And y naught is?
And y naught is the solution of the perfect slow roll.
About this perfect slow roll equation.
Sorry?
I mean, I could do something else. If you're replacing the y with y0, and then you try to find a solution there. So
yeah,
that's one option. The other option is perhaps more obvious, would have been just to use the y0 as the solution and do a linearized perturbations on top of that. So what do I lose if I go in that direction?
So we are trying to solve for solutions where y deviates from y naught, where the exact solution deviates largely from y naught. So if you evolve if you make a Taylor expansion around y naught, you will never reach those solutions that have large deviations.
Right. So that makes sense. But on the other hand, in this GSR approximation, I have to buy that somehow replacing y by y naught will be a conversion procedure or something that is...
Yes, and I will show you why it will be well controlled in the next slide. I will show you why this is well controlled, right? Because you have large deviations, but so let me tell you 1 second about this solution and I will go to your question. So we solve for these problems by introducing quadratic terms in the source function and going up to second order. This is our new source function, g prime, and w and x are two external and known functions, which are the green functions. A nice property of this solution is that it depends only in a single source function that is unknown, and the rest is known. So answering to your question, even though the source function can be large, these integrals are small, and this is the key element why the solution is well controlled.
And if I just solve these mode equations numerically, then I would have a lot more integrals to do.
No, so that's a good question. So you can also solve them numerically, but I think this probably comes well. You can solve them numerically. So two advantages of doing this. This is faster. This is one minor advantage that you just have to evaluate this, that you can pre-compute, and it's faster than solving the numerical equations. But the nice property of this is that I will show you in a couple of slides that this source function is nicely related to the inflaton potential. So if you, in the normal Mukhanov solution, you have the relation with the inflationary potential is more obscured. So we will use the fact that this is related to the inflationary potential to impose constraints in the potential. So I'll show you the relation in the next slide. So this is our source function, and we can express it as a function of f and derivatives of the primes are derivatives with respect to conformal time, to the log of conformal time. So f carries the information of deviation from perfect slow roll. So in the case of standard slow roll, this is slowly varying, and g prime, our new source function, is a constant. So when g prime is equal to 0, we have the case of perfect slow roll, and if not, it's a constant. Okay, so this is the relation. Let me get to it. So a nice property of this is that it satisfies constant curvature for modes outside the horizon. You can choose any value of eta min for these integrals, and the curvature will be the same. It is easy to see that we can recover the slow roll result using a constant source function. It is well controlled for time varying and other unity slow roll parameters, leaving percent level errors. And this is because the key elements are these time integrals that are small, even if the source is not small everywhere. So by the way, these are oscillatory functions. This peaks at approximately horizon crossing, and this has its weight starting from horizon crossing up to super horizon mode. So it's one at super horizon scales. And finally, this is the nice feature of this solution, is that it is simply related to the inflaton potential and its derivatives in the same way that tilt is for the case of standard slow roll. So bear this in mind, and we will use it to impose constraints in the inflationary potential. So here in the next couple of slides, I will show...
Yes. First, what are the corrections to this formula? So what would be the next order term in this G prime?
Okay, so this goes up to the next order, so this this solution goes up to third order in the slow roll parameter, so the one that I call delta 2.
Yeah.
And this is, yes, this is only valid when the delta 2. So we can have eta h greater than 1, but delta 2 has to be even greater than eta h.
Yeah.
So the inflaton has to cross the feature for about an infold or less. We also don't want to stop inflation. So epsilon doesn't get to 1. So the next order would be to add a fourth slow roll parameter.
So the higher derivative of the potential.
Right.
Yeah, okay. And the other thing is, so why and why not they should stay close to each other? Is that right or not?
So, okay, so why and why not can approximation, the reason why the GSR, the previous GSR computed by Stewart didn't work was that the curvature is basically x times y over this function's f. So when f varies strongly, when the mode is outside the horizon, y has to follow follow suit and deviate from y not breaking the standard slow roll approximation. So yes, why has to remain close to y not in order for this approximation to?
But I thought you said you want order one fluctuations of the power spectrum. So.
Right. So you can have order one fluctuations in the power spectrum, which would make this big. But y minus y not is basically given by. You can, it can. So why not has to remain in general constant to y has to remain generally constant to y not, but it can deviate for a fraction of an e-fold or about an e-fold.
Can I ask you? So in standard inflation, you get an excellent fit to the angular power spectrum.
Sorry?
You get a good fit to the angular power spectrum, as you showed at the beginning.
Yes.
With lambda CDF. A parameters or whatever. And there you have a standard assumption about the slow roll and so on.
That's right.
So what is it you expect to learn from doing this? Because you already have a good fit.
You already have a good fit. That's a valid question. And what I expect to do is to test these fundamental assumptions.
Is to what?
To test these fundamental assumptions. You already have a good fit with a certain fundamental assumptions, and we want to test them to see how valid they are, and if you could have a better fit with other assumptions.
Okay, so you attempted to try to falsify a theory? Or verify
it? To test it.
Whichever way you want to look at it.
I would say to test it. You'll get constraints on the inflaton potential.
Sorry?
You'll get constraints on the inflaton potential.
Exactly. But yes, I expect to test this theory.
You expect to test it?
Yes.
So what how would you find that you falsified?
For example, I will show you later on that if I apply this formalism to the data and I get a major improvement over a smooth model, that would tell me that the potential doesn't have to be smooth, and in fact I can have inflationary features in the potential that give me a much better fit to the data.
Then we get back to Jim's question about chi-square statistical business.
I'll show you how, in my method, I'm defining everything in an a priori way, and I'll get back to this in some slides. Sorry. Okay. So in the next couple of slides, I will show you the level of precision of this method. And as an example, I take a model with order unity deviations in the curvature power spectrum that I'm showing here in black. I'm showing the initial curvature power spectrum, the temperature, and the polarization. And to give you an idea of the amplitude of the feature that I want to approximate, I will first show a comparison between the model with a step in the potential in black compared to a smooth model in red. So the fractional change between these two models is about 20% in the case of temperature and 50% in the case of polarization. So when I apply this approximation, I'm comparing here the exact solution that I evolved numerically compared to the approximation that I'm showing in red. And in the lower panels, I'm showing the fractional error between these two solutions. I have errors of less than 4% in the case of the power spectrum, of less than 1% in the case of temperature, which is within cosmic variance taking a broad band in L, and of less than 2% in the case of polarization. And note that here the errors in temperature and polarization are smaller than the errors in the power spectrum due to projection effects when going from power spectrum to the temperature and polarization power spectra. So we have here a technique that is accurate at percent level error within cosmic variance for describing features in the inflationary potential that can give order unity deviations in the curvature power spectrum. So the generalized slow roll approximation provides a nonlinear mapping between the curvature power spectrum and the source function. And what I will show you is how we can impose constraints from the CMB temperature and polarization power spectra onto constraints in the source function, and later on use these empirical constraints to test any model of single field inflation. So in the next part of the talk, I will show you how I implemented this formalism to the data, and I will present results coming from Markov chain Monte Carlo likelihood analysis. Okay. So I think this will go back to your question. We use a principal component basis for a complete representation of the observable properties of the source function. These principal components are eigenfunctions of the covariance matrix of perturbations of the source function around the smooth model. So we parameterize the source function in the following way, where these are the amplitudes of these principal components. These are the eigenfunctions. So when the principal components are set to zero, we have the case of the power law model. And I'm showing here the first five principal components as a function of conformal time to the end of inflation after being marginalized over cosmological parameters. So in particular, in practice, we are marginalizing over scalar tilt, scalar amplitude, baryon density, cold dark matter density, angular size of the horizon at recombination, and optical depth. So a nice feature of this is that these principal components are defined a priori from the covariance matrix. We're using a noise model of WMAP. So in analyzing the data with these principal components, we avoid possible a posteriori biases when looking at specific signatures in the data. We don't take into account the data when building these principal components. So in that sense, we are doing a model-independent test. These principal components are ranked in order of observability, being the first one the best measured one, the second one second measured one, and so on. The first five principal components are measured at the same level of precision as the scalar field, and they give us an idea of deviations from slow roll at the 10% level.
So could I also have imagined doing this differently by letting those functions be functions of the other cosmological parameters, and then when I do the MCMC, let them vary
well,
the other parameters?
So they are not functions of the other cosmological parameters. We are parameterizing the power spectrum, which is not yet related to the other cosmological parameters. The other cosmological...
Okay, but you said you marginalized over something.
Right. I marginalized over all the cosmological parameters because I don't want to assume them fixed. So I want my results to be independent of a specific choice of cosmological parameters. That's why I'm marginalizing them in computing this. I don't want them to be... a priori, have degeneracies with cosmological parameters.
But you're saying that then these S's aren't originally functions of those parameters?
Right. So
not defined?
They are defined as an eigen... So they are defined from the covariance matrix of perturbations around the smooth model. So in order to define them, we assume a smooth model. That's right. But then we marginalize over cosmological parameters.
So that, to me, that sounds like a choice. I could have not marginalized, and then I could have kept these essays as being functions of all the background parameters and put them into
you could do that.
Cosmo MC, and that would have led me to a different
result. You could do that, yes. You could do that, but we marginalize them, so you could do what you're saying, it's a choice, but we want to erase every possible degeneracy between eigenfunctions and cosmological parameters. So when we marginalize them, in a sense, we are making them orthogonal to the other cosmological parameters.
So just in order to understand this, does this mean that the errors in MA are not correlated with errors in any other parameters?
They should not be.
They should not be. Okay, so if these are constructed correctly, then the correlation of delta MA and delta, say, NS would be zero, right?
That, and in an ideal case, because in practice they will have correlations, and this is because when you add unconstrained modes, you break orthogonality of these bases. So we will end up having those correlations in a, smaller than the correlations that would come if we wouldn't have marginalized over cosmological parameters. That doesn't mean that we did it wrong. It just means that we are taking into account more and more modes that are unconstrained, so that breaks orthogonality.
And if I ask this question based just on, so forgetting anything about constraining inflations, but if I ask, if I just look at the ability to observe some aspect of the power spectrum, I guess, as a function of L. Could I have similarly made, are these originate in the data and then they're translated to the inflation model, or do they originate in the inflation model?
Oh, they are, so this G prime is related to the curvature power spectrum. That's what you're asking. So you can impose constraints in the curvature power spectrum.
So can you, right now you've written in terms of eta and everything, but could I back it out and just say these are just functions, observable properties of the measured curvature power spectrum as function of L, for example?
As a function of L. So the curvature power spectrum will be as a function of K, but then you can, if you want something as a function of L, you will have to integrate the curvature power spectrum with the transfer functions to get the CL.
So you're not starting in the data as much as with the curvature power spectrum?
I am starting from the data with the curvature power spectrum. That's right. So this is the parametrization of G prime. This G prime goes into the curvature power spectrum, and that's what we are having inside CAMP. So the data is, we are varying the curvature power spectrum, and that varies the observable CLs.
Right. But I guess what I'm asking is, sorry. So the way you define G, it this. I see. Okay.
No, no. This is just some funny basis for parameterizing a shape, a bump.
But I'm just wondering if you can, without referring to the fact that you're parameterizing inflation, are you parameterizing a feature of the potential?
Aren't you parameterizing a feature in the power spectrum?
Sorry, so this does not assume any bump in the inflationary potential. These are just, you take a smooth model, you construct the covariance of perturbations around the smooth source function, and you get these eigenfunctions. And we will test the data. We are not assuming anything about the inflationary potential here.
But if these MAs turn out to be non-zero, doesn't that mean that it wasn't a very
exactly,
flat potential?
Exactly.
So there was a feature. If they turn out to be non-zero.
Exactly. That's what we will see when I apply this to the data. A priori, I'm not saying anything. This is not assuming anything, but we will exactly get to that point.
But I think maybe one thing that needs to be stressed is that this is not really an assumption. This is something that comes out of the data.
Exactly.
That if you do it for Planck, you're going to get something different. Just
exactly.
Tell me that what is your experiment most sensitive to?
Exactly. So I will. So as I show you here. So the lower order pieces in the WMAP, in any data set, carry the information of the best measured region in that data set. So in the case of WMAP, the first five principal components have their weight in the best measured region, which is around scales of acoustic peak. So that would change for any other data set. I'm showing here the sensitivity of the temperature power spectrum to the different principal component amplitudes as the function of multiple moments. So as we can see, they have their weight around the region of the acoustic peak. So in using the first principal components, the first five principal components to analyze the data, we are probing epochs of inflation associated with scales around the acoustic peak that were crossing at time of horizon crossing. So, in practice, we parameterize the curvature power spectrum as a function of scalar amplitude, scalar tilt, and the amplitudes of these principal components. So, we make changes in the curvature power spectrum when we change the amplitudes of these principal components, and this process is fast because it does not require recomputation of the CMB radiation transfer function. So, this is fast and efficient, and if we consider many principal components, our main bottleneck end up being in the likelihood code. So for purposes of this study, we OpenMP parallelized the WMAP likelihood code, and on top of that, we improved its speed by 5 times the number of cores. So in practice, we were using 8 cores, so I had a speed up of 40. And in case anyone is interested, this optimized code is in this website. So, going back to what you were saying.
Can I ask, what did you do to make it so much faster?
So first the OpenMP parallelization is given by this term, so it depends on the number of cores. And then there were a lot of bottlenecks in the WMAP likelihood code that were associated with loops that, loops that were recalculating the same thing over and over again. So I put that out. And on top of that, I did an approximation for, so if we remove everything, if we open and parallelize it and we remove all those bottlenecks, the thing that ends up being the slowest part is the low L part of the polarization likelihood code. So I found that approximating that part by a two-band E-mode power spectrum, a Gaussian of two bands in the E-mode power spectrum gives a perfect approximation to the likelihood, even in the case of features. In the CLs. So I'm showing here the result of our analysis of chains with WMAP 7-year data. These are 1D posterior probability distributions of the cosmological parameters here and the amplitudes of the principal components here. In black, I'm showing the general inflationary model where the principal components are being varied. And in red, I'm showing the standard lambda CDM model where the principal components are set to zero. So going back to what you were saying, non-zero values represent deviations from slow roll and power law model. What we saw is that 1 out of 5 of these principal components has a 95% confidence level preference for non-zero value, which is marginal given the 5 parameters considered. And on top of that, this is only true if the value of the cold dark matter density is high, which is disfavored by current supernovae and Hubble constant measurements. So when I run chains adding supernovae and Hubble constant measurements, this omega cold dark matter becomes lower and the value of M4 becomes more consistent with zero. We found, interestingly, that this fourth component carries most of the information about running of the tilt. So it resembles a local running of the tilt at scales of L of 30 to 800, but it is marginally consistent with a constant running of that size beyond this range. So when I add larger and smaller scales, the significance of that constant running of the tilt becomes lower. So these rather points, other than a constant running of the tilt, rather points to local deviations from scale-free conditions.
It wants a negative running of the
tilt. Yes, it wants a negative running of the tilt of about 1.9 sigma, which is, well, yeah. And it goes down to about 1.2 sigma when I add supernovae and Hubble constant measurements. So the maximum likelihood model coming from this general inflation, coming from marginalizing over principal components, has a delta chi-square improvement of 5, with 5 additional degrees of freedom, which, again, is marginal. It's a marginal improvement, so our results are consistent with a smooth inflationary potential. I run chains including tensor mode, spatial curvature, ST emission from unresolved clusters, and this result is robust under all of these effects.
Does the support of those functions cover the whole observable region? So it seems like I could shift them around to look for features in other
areas. Yes, that's what I will show later on. Yeah. So we are looking for deviations from slow roll around the region of the first acoustic peak, which is the region best measured by WMAP.
Which is also where you have the first glitch, I guess.
Yeah, there have been claims of that glitch, that's right. So I'm showing temperature and polarization power spectrum. In black, I'm showing the maximum likelihood model coming from this general inflationary model where PCs are being varied. And in red, I'm showing the power law spectrum. So here I'm showing the fractional difference between these two models. As we can see, they agree pretty well in the region best measured by the data. The difference is about 1%. However, this is due to the generosities between principal components and cosmological parameters. So most of the improvement comes from the fourth component that is correlated with that has some degeneracy with cold dark matter. So the cold dark matter is higher, and in order to keep the angular size of the horizon at recombination compatible with the data, we need a lower value of the dark energy density. That's why we see this here. And these degeneracies are not preserved beyond L of 1,000. So better measurements at small scale temperature will help improve inflationary constraints. And better measurements of the cosmological parameters that tells us that measure the distance to recombination will also help us improve inflationary constraints. Polarization shows bigger differences, and this is due to differences in the transfer function. The transfer function in polarization is sharper. So in other words, there is a cleaner map between K to L. So polarization is potentially a much better probe for seeing features in the inflationary potential. So as we can see here, better measurements at L greater than 100, at better than 10%, will also help improve inflationary constraints. So Planck will definitely help resolve this issue. Okay, so in the next part of the talk, in the last part of the talk, I will talk about some work in progress that I'm doing to extend this research. And here I'm going back to what you were saying. I'm working now on constraining the entire observable range of scales. So in order to put constraints on the entire observable range of scales, I need a basis of 20 principal components. I proved that this is complete to account for large features in poorly constrained regions of the data. So I'm showing here preliminary results coming from chains with 20 with 6 cosmological parameters and 20 principal components added on top of that, where I take into account WMAP 7-year data, BICEP, quad, and constraints coming from supernovae, Hubble constant, and BBN. In black, I'm showing the maximum likelihood model coming from this general inflationary model. And the shaded region corresponds to 68% confidence level limits. The upper and lower curves are 95% confidence level limits.
Sorry,
yes.
Do you have access to ACT power spectrum, ACT or SPTR?
I actually, so I have access to ACBAR, which will help if that's where, that would help.
But I think ACT is much better, isn't it?
ACT than ACBAR?
ACT, yeah.
So I found access to ACBAR, and I'm running chains with ACBAR at the moment, and to SPT. I'm not sure if ACT has available.
That's what I was wondering. Okay.
Yeah, but
because it seems that they have much better calibration than SPT in like L of 1,000 to 2,000. So that might be exactly where you want the resolution to.
Okay, that's interesting.
Okay.
I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah,
okay, I'm just wondering if you think
that's right. So at the moment, I'm running chains with ACBAR data.
Mm-hmm.
If ACT data is available, I could definitely run chains with ACT data to see if that helped improve. So this is the maximum likelihood model, and as we can see, we are starting to see this. We see this deep and bump and dip at L of 20 to 40. We see a low quadrupole. However, this model, again, has a delta chi-square improvement of 17, but with 20 extra degrees of freedom. So still, our results are consistent with a smooth inflationary potential. We can impose constraints in the source function, and I'm showing here the source function after being weighted by 20 principal components. So the maximum likelihood model is what I'm showing in black. And again, the shaded regions are the 68% confidence level limit, and upper and lower curves are 95% confidence level limit. So any inflationary model lying outside these bounds would be in tension with the data. Let me mention that these narrow constraints here are not coming from the data. They are just coming from the fact that this is the region that we are probing with our 20 principal components, and this just reflects the fact that we have zero weight of our principal components outside of that region. So here, this part corresponds to the dip and bump at L of 20 to 40. This part over here corresponds to scales of 2 to 20, and these features here correspond to the first acoustic peak. So in practice, what we can do is we can take a well-motivated model of inflation, we can construct a source function, project it onto our principal component basis to compute the amplitudes of these principal components, and compare them with our posteriors coming from the chain, and use that to assess the statistical significance of any single field inflationary model without requiring a new analysis of the data. So this is fast and efficient, and it does not require running long chains. So as an example, I'm showing here the source function of a model with a running of the tilt in black, and in dashed blue lines. And in black, I'm showing the projected source function over 20 principal components. So the agreement in this region is telling us that we are completing our 20 principal components. In other words, if we compute the CL coming from these two sources, the likelihood doesn't show any difference. So we are completing the observable properties of the source function.
But how do you assess the statistical significance of a non-zero value, since in the first way I just had one extra parameter, and in your way I've got 20?
Right. So what you would do is you can compute the delta chi squared as, for example, say that your model has a set of MAs, right? You compute the source function, you project it onto the principal component basis, and you have a set of MAs. So what you would do to compute the chi squared is to take the MAs of your model minus the mean MA times the inverse of the covariance matrix times MA minus the mean of coming from our posterior. So you use the whole covariance matrix to... You don't compare just the 1D posteriors. You would use the whole covariance matrix.
You can use the chalk if that's... I don't know if that's a fan helps.
Just saying that...
All I'm saying is that I know that by putting in running, I'll get a certain delta chi squared.
Right.
And now, with your parameterization, I'll get the same delta chi squared. One had 20 parameters, one had one extra parameter, and so it seems like the statistical significance of the improvement will be difficult to judge.
Absolutely. Yeah, this is just... Okay, now I understand your question. This is just an example. I'm saying that you could use this for any model, not only a model with a running.
Yeah, but the problem I'm pointing out will apply to any model as well. Typically, I'm only going to have a few extra parameters characterizing the model.
She was suggesting before that for any given number of extra parameters you add, you get some reduction in chi squared, and you can ask what is the probability you can compute, what is the probability that you would compute that randomly, just by adding, that's particularly low, and then just says more confidence that those parameters are not just randomly.
Right.
I think for Gaussian statistics, this is not a hard question to answer. It's something like, it's just based on how many parameters you have, you can say how much you expect improvement of chi squared. If you get much better than that, then...
Yeah, but you'll not get better... With your 20 parameters, you will not get better than you would get with the one parameter here.
Well, she said you get 17, right? You said
right, so for... Are you asking about the improvement of this model, with the 20 extra parameters, I'm getting a delta chi square of 17. So you could
I'm asking about the one you just showed, where the only thing that's really happening is a running of the tilt.
Okay, yes, that's for the 5 parameters, that's right. But there I was only, so that's with 5 parameters, but there I was just looking at a specific region in the data, the best measured region, and now I'm looking at all the observable range of scales of
I mean, if she computed the probability of reduction of 17 in chi squared from adding one parameter, the probability of that having a random much lower than adding,
exactly,
adding 20 parameters, so she would have good evidence.
Right.
The parameter was seven or something.
Yes.
Probably math 7 has excluded like the 5 to the 4th.
Sorry, WMAP?
WMAP 7 excludes lambda 5 to the 4th.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't exclude 1/2 x squared phi squared.
That's right.
So different models of VFI seriously affect what's going on.
Yes.
So to have, but you said your work does not depend on knowing the effect, so to speak.
Oh, what I mean is that I am imposing constraints beyond making a specific choice of the potential.
No, but it, line of fire, the thought has been ruled out. It's the ellipse, you know, it's sitting out there.
Yes.
So if you put in line of fire to the fourth, what do you get?
Oh, so...
Turn it around.
So that model has been ruled out because if you consider, say, 50 or 60 EFOLs, you get too much. If you draw the 2D marginalized plot of R versus NS, you get too much tensors, for example. But I'm not considering tensors here. So the reason why I'm not considering tensors is because we are not reconstructing the inflationary potential. We are just imposing constraints. But I would not be able to rule out that model.
Yeah, because there have been criticisms over the years as to whether you can ever disprove inflation, so to speak.
So here I'm assuming that inflation...
potentials.
Right. Here I'm assuming that inflation happens and I'm not trying to disprove it. Just trying to impose constraints on that theory. Okay, so... Shall I go on?
I will keep quiet.
Okay. So we can use polarization also to constrain models with features in the potential. Here I'm showing the results of these chains with 20 extra parameters, and I'm showing in the lower panel the fractional difference between this general inflationary model compared to a smooth model. So as we can see here, measurements at L of 20 to 40 at better than 40% level will help test the feature hypothesis. So if the features in the inflationary potential are real in the sense that they come from an inflationary potential with a step, we will expect matching features in the polarization power spectrum. So we studied this in this work where we saw that Planck will be able to confirm or rule out models with features at 3 sigma level, and a mission, a futuristic mission such as CLB Pol, will be able to confirm or rule them out at 8 sigma level. And we saw that the main source of confusion comes from a complex realization history that also induces features in the polarization power spectrum. And we studied this by taking an ionization field that is a function, a free function of principal components. And we saw that the significance gets slightly degraded to 2.5 sigma with Planck and 5 to 6 sigma with CLB Pol. So, finally, one can use this method as a model-independent test of single-field inflation. So, since we are in single-field inflation, we have only one degree of freedom. So constraints on the source function also impose constraints in the E-mode polarization power spectrum. So one can draw upper and lower bounds that correspond to all of the inflationary potentials that are consistent with temperature observations. So any model lying outside of these bounds would imply that there are additional isocurvature degrees of freedom that break the relationship between temperature and polarization and could potentially rule out single-field inflation. So, in conclusion, I introduced a general formalism to constrain the inflationary potential from the data, allowing for large amplitude and rapidly varying deviations from slow roll. I showed you how constraints on the region of the first acoustic peak are consistent with a smooth inflationary potential, and preliminary results show that when we consider the whole range of observable scales, this is also consistent with a smooth inflationary potential. We can use this formalism we can use the empirical constraints coming from this analysis using this formalism to test any single field inflationary model, and we can use it as a model independent test of single field inflation. So as part of ongoing work, I'm working on extending this analysis to the entire range of observable scales, and something that I have been thinking, that I started to think about, is to construct an analogous formalism for calculating the bispectrum from the shape of the inflationary potential. Okay, thank you.
So the model-dependent test of single-field inflation is a model. It's really a model-independent test of adiabaticity. Is that right?
Yes.
So far, the adiabaticity is. Yeah.
Yes. That's right.
It's a model-independent test of something that's a little bit more general. That's true.
That's more general. So what we are testing is adiabaticity, which gives the relation. Right, that implies the relation between temperature and EMOM polarization. Yeah, that's a good point.
And with your last point, did you mean specifically the bispectrum of these features, or did you mean
something else? So what I meant, so one can do two things. One can test these specific models with features, but what I have in mind is to try to explore if it's possible to construct a general formalism, not only relevant for these models with features, where we can construct the bispectrum coming from single field inflation from the shape of the potential. So this is different from FNL in the sense that the bispectrum would be a function of L1, L2, or L3. Yeah, but I meant something more general.
Okay, even though probably you can't measure, I mean, in the future you might be able to measure it, but maybe else it might be.
It might be, so you could have features in the potential, I agree, it might be hard to measure it just, you know, because these features would be localized and the number of triangles probably would not be that large, but it's interesting. I'm interested in seeing if this a general method is possible, especially because if it was possible to write the bispectrum as a function of a source function, then one could, you know, I can imagine doing the same analysis, building principal components of this source function, and looking at how many independent bispectra are possible to constrain. But it's something that I still didn't do.
So is it true that previously when people have constrained adiabaticity, they've done it by they add the temperature, or maybe the temperature and polarization, various hypothetical spectra for the various isocurvature modes, and then try to limit those. And you're saying it's model independent in the sense, your proposal is model independent in the sense that you don't do any of that. You don't do any choosing of the
exactly
a priori choice of the functional form of the isocurvature.
Right, exactly.
And you ignore tensors.
Sorry?
You ignore tensors.
I ignore tensors in this analysis.
So
what I'm using here, I know tensors, so what I'm using, but it is still true that if you have adiabatic moles, you have a direct relationship between temperature and E-mole polarization.
Even if you have tensor modes, you have a direct relationship.
Yeah.
But, I mean, my point is that if you find that the model is ruled out, it could be that there's... You have either Cambridge fluctuations or you have tensors or
no, that from this direct right relationship, that would mean that I don't have adiabatic modes, that I have something else. It wouldn't imply that I have tensors.
But you said you haven't included tensors, so how do you know?
Right, but the inclusion of the tensors, not including tensors, doesn't mean that I am... So my doesn't mean that the direct relationship between temperature and E-mole polarization is still true. So all what I'm saying, all what I'm saying here is that disregarding tensors, if you have adiabatic moles, you have a direct relationship between temperature and E-mode polarization.
Because famously, the temperature spectrum doesn't let us know if the single field gravitational wave spectrum. So the gravitational wave is contributed by E mode and B mode.
Right.
But the scalars don't tell you how much the gravitational wave is in the lens. So.
Oh, okay. You're saying that you could have. Okay. So you're saying that you could have tensor E modes that could. That could be added to this. That's what you're saying. Okay,
yeah.
Yes, I agree with you. Sorry, yeah.
Okay.
That's right.
Good.
Sorry, I thought that we were talking about B modes, but that's right. I ignore tensors, so you could have tensor E modes here. I completely agree.
Okay, well, if there aren't any more questions, let's thank Cora again. She's here until tomorrow at noon, roughly, is that right?
Yes.